This jam search, it's got to end now, for my sanity's sake. I mean, I know they've got time, right? The draft's not till June 21st. It's only April. Today's the 29th of April. There's time. But, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, they're out of the playoffs, what, was it a week ago or so? Maybe a little longer? So there's probably, I'll bet you Bob Nicholson's been on the blower to Las Vegas or Brandon or wherever Kelly McCrimmon is right now and has talked to him. You know, I don't know what that conversation is like. Maybe Kelly's asking Bob more about the situation in Edmonton rather than Bob feeling out Kelly McCrimmon. Elliot Friedman was on the local Oilers radio show, Oilers with a little trademark on it, with Bob Stauffer. And Elliot Friedman was saying that the search is now down to three, Hunter, McCrimmon, and another guy. So who knows who the other guy is? Could be one of a few. Maybe soon it could be as even today. We could get a press release over Twitter or maybe an email. They might tell us details. They might not tell us details. I'm with Derek Van Deest. I'm with Rob Dutchkowski today. But any moment now, you guys, you have to jump into action.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I wonder how much of a job GMs are selling themselves to the Oilers and how much of a job the Oilers are selling themselves to the GM, because you look at the situation here at Edmonton and it's a mess. It's a mess from top on down, and a new GM is going to come in here and he's going to want to know what he's able to do and who he's able to let go and who he's able to bring in. And I think that's probably the key right now. When you look at a guy like Kelly McCrimmon and you look at a guy like, you know, Mark Hunter, they're asking, okay, if I get the job, what's my power, I guess? What can I do? Can I tell Wayne Gretzky, thank you very much for your service, see you later? Can I tell Paul Coffey, thank you very much for your service, see you later? Can I tell some of the scouts, thank you very much for your service, see you later? And I think that is one of the big issues right now is, are the Oilers selling themselves to a GM or is a GM selling themselves to the Oilers? Because this is not cut and dry position where he comes in here and has carte blanche to do whatever he wants. He has to have that ability. I know they said that Peter Chiarelli had that ability, but I really highly doubt Peter Chiarelli hired Wayne Gretzky. I doubt Peter Chiarelli wanted to get Paul Coffey on board. I doubt Peter Chiarelli wanted Mark Messier's brother on board. So I think this is a situation right now is what, if I was a GM, if I was someone looking at this job, which isn't a very appealing job, it's a very attractive job, but those are the questions I'd want to ask. Like, who's interviewing who here? Are they interviewing the GMs or are the GMs interviewing the Oilers?
Yeah, you can't just go to a GM and say, you know, hey, you get to have Connor McDavid. Like, that doesn't really sell it anymore. Like, you know, there's been a couple of coaches already and a couple of GMs that have had Connor McDavid and been fired. It's a tough job to get into. Like, you look at this team and you're pressed up right against the salary cap. You don't have a lot of assets that you can trade away. It's a really tough repair job. And if you're a young executive, you know, looking for his first job as a general manager, as full-time GM, this is a good place to go and get your reputation destroyed, because it's a tough job to get the Oilers out of the situation they're in. Just, you know, even forgetting all the problems that they have with player personnel and player development and all the other others. Look at this current roster, look where they are against the cap, look what they have to trade their way out of this. And it's a tough fix. So I think a GM coming into this situation is going to look around and say, there might be some better, you know, like any team that's looking for a GM is in bad shape, or they wouldn't be looking for a GM typically. But, you know, if you're McCrimmon, maybe you're waiting on Seattle. If you're, you know, Hunter, you know, this isn't necessarily where you would go to kind of emerge as a rising star executive, because the last few GMs that have been through this team, their stocks went down when they left here. So, like Derek was saying, it's a tough sell to take this job.
You know, considering that, I mean, you think about and there's a plethora of candidates out there, whether you're a seasoned GM, somebody like, say, Mark Hunter or Kelly McCrimmon, who's been an assistant general manager with a team that, you know, had success, Maple Leafs, in recent times, and the Golden Knights, obviously, these last two seasons. Or whether you end up getting somebody who, I mean, I guess, you know, the guy like Pat Verbeek and Billy Guerin and all these guys have been AGMs as well. You know, maybe a bit younger. I mean, Pat Verbeek's not, he's no 40-year-old. He's been around the game for a long time. But you just get the sense that if they end up going with a guy like Keith Gretzky, or they go with somebody who's a little, you know, less, you know, Hunter and McCrimmon get knocked around a lot. I mean, we talk about them a lot because they're probably high on the list. But if we end up with a candidate who I don't even want to mention a name. We end up with a candidate that's like, oh, okay, we didn't quite expect him. Somebody who's not in the top five of everybody's wish list. Is that maybe an indication that the Oilers couldn't convince a Mark Hunter or a Kelly McCrimmon to come in because they couldn't have that much say and have that much power? Go with somebody who's maybe doesn't have that kind of cachet.
It depends what their plan is, right? They're sitting down with Bob Nicholson and he's saying, okay, take a look at this roster. It's not very good. We're up against the cap. We don't have anybody to trade. How do you go about fixing this? And then that ultimately is where the decision should be made.
Right.
Is, you know, what this guy's plan for the future of the Edmonton Oilers is going to be. And is it going to be, you know, we might need a bit of a rebuild here? Or is it going to be, we're going to have to do some sort of buyouts? Does it mean trading Nugent Hopkins? Does it mean, you know, getting another goalie? Like, what is your plan to get them out of this mess? And I think ultimately that's where the decision has to be made. And unless you're in the room, you know, McCrimmon and Hunter, they're sort of one and 1A, like they're the same person. They might not have the same vision for where the Edmonton Oilers need to be, you know, 6 months from now, this summer, and then halfway through next season, and then at the end of next season. There's a lot of big moves that might have to be made to get them through this. And somebody might be saying, let's stay the course and wait for the young kids, Ethan Bear and those guys to develop. Somebody else might be saying, like, let's make some hard, aggressive moves because that's the only way out of this. So, you know, I'd want to hear what they had to say first before I pass judgment. But, no, people just like to pass judgment.
Well, this is the situation I look at it. When Kevin Lowe stepped away, he stepped away. He stepped away for personal reasons, but I'm still convinced he stepped away because Darryl Cates wanted some say in the team. And Darryl Cates offered Marian Hossa $8 million, $81 million for 8 years. And that was a deal that Kevin Lowe looked at and said, no, we can't afford that in a salary cap structure. That's going to blow up everything I'm doing. I don't want to be your GM anymore. If you're going to come in here and tell me I got to sign Marian Hossa, if you're going to come in here and tell me I got to sign Mike Comrie, if you're going to come in here and tell me I got to sign this guy or this guy. And so they stepped away. And when he stepped away, they needed to bring in a GM that would allow that, that would say, okay, you know what? I understand what you're coming. And so they got Steve Tambellini. And at that time, it made perfect sense because Steve Tambellini wanted to be an executive. He wanted to get in that GM role. He had this opportunity. And all basically, they said, you're going to be the GM, but the owner's going to have some suggestions and you're going to have signed some guys. And that happened when they brought in and signed Mike Comrie. Mike Comrie was a guy that they didn't need, but they needed Mike Comrie because they had the keep Bill Comrie happy because they needed Bill Comrie support for the new arena deal. It was just so convoluted. So now you're looking at the situation where are they going to bring another GM that says, okay, well, you have basically the run of the team, but if Darryl Cates says you got to have this guy on your payroll, you got to have this guy on your staff, you got to have this guy scouting for you, are you going to be able to get a GM that says, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if that works for me. So I think that's, you know, when you're a young executive and there's only 31 GM jobs available, it's going to be 32 when Seattle comes in and you want to get into it. Sometimes you have to kind of make those concessions. And is that, if you're getting a GM that's making those concessions, are you getting the best GM available? And I think there's a lot of pressure on the Oilers right now to bring someone in because it is the third year renewal of season tickets. It is a third year renewal of boxes. And people want to see the direction of this team before they sign up for another 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or whatever it is. So I think there is some pressure there. But what are they looking at right now? Are they looking at a guy that can come in here and still have some say, and Darryl Cates still wants to have some say in direction of his club? Or do they look at a guy that can come here and has free range to clean out everybody if he wants to? And I think that's the biggest question right now. And if I was one of those GMs looking for that job, that's what I'd be asking the Oilers right now.
And that's why I'm suggesting that if it ends up being a guy like Mark Hunter or McCrimmon, or maybe even say Ken Holland, who was recently, you know, promoted, quote unquote, to senior VP, but, you know, as Stevie Y came in to take the GM reins in Detroit, if it's one of those guys, then maybe it is a signal that the Oilers are willing to have everything changed over. That guy has all the say in the world. You know, yeah, Darryl Cates will go, okay, fine, just do it. I want a winning team. However, we get somebody who's less of a name, it is a Steve Tambellini all over again. That's what I think.
It is. And I think that we saw the situation with Steve Tambellini. He was doing what he could, but he also had some influence and some input from people above him. And it's tough to do your job when you're always having someone look over your shoulder and someone telling you, you know what, we need to sign this guy, not for hockey reasons, but maybe for other reasons we need to sign this guy, or you need to bring this guy on board, or you got to hire this guy as a scout, not necessarily because he's the best scout, but he's a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend type thing. This is where the mess has to get cleaned up here in Edmonton.
Yeah, and the team itself too. Like I honestly don't know how you would fix this like quickly, like to get this team into the playoffs next season. Because if they miss again, it's going to be bad. And are you going to have to trade like a Nugent Hopkins and a Klefbom to bring in different pieces? Because you know, you look at the players on this team that you can trade to bring something valuable back, and there aren't a whole bunch other than the integral pieces that you can't let go. So I would be interested to hear what the pitches are. Like these guys, you know, they would have to study the Oilers to some extent and have a plan that they're going to put forward in those meetings. And is it, you know, let's wait and hope that Tyler Benson and Yamamoto and Bouchard can come in here and be the difference makers, or are you going to have to be proactive and somehow, even though you're up against the cap and you don't have anything to trade and the free agents don't want to come here, bring in the three or four impact players that you need to turn this team around? That's a tough order, and I honestly don't know how they do it.
Well, the situation with Kelly McCrimmon, it's interesting because, yeah, he wants to be a GM in the league, but he's probably the front runner for Seattle as well. And he looks at himself and he goes, okay, well, I'm in a pretty good spot here in Vegas. I'm learning a lot. I'm doing well. I'm having lots of fun. We're making the playoffs. We're going on these runs. In 2 years, that Seattle job's going to be open, and probably my name will be the number one on the list, and I get to start from scratch. I get to build my own team, do it my own way, the way we did it in Vegas. I don't have to take any bad contracts. I don't have to have any players that I don't want. That's pretty attractive as well for Kelly McCrimmon to say that and to say, okay, do I want to come into Edmonton with a terrible situation? Or do I want to go and try and do what I did in Vegas in Seattle? They're going to have all the exact same advantages that Vegas did. They're going to have really good players to pick from in the expansion draft. So that's something that's weighing as well. And if you're looking at Kelly McCrimmon, and if I'm Kelly McCrimmon, I'm wondering, well, yeah, no, I don't know. I think the Seattle thing is really attractive. So you guys are going to have to pay me a lot to come to Edmonton, or somehow make it worth my while to kind of turn down that Seattle job.
Yeah, there's way better jobs than Edmonton right now. Like Vegas looks like a ton of fun. Then that community that they live in just outside of Vegas is like this paradise. It's you know, this beautiful little, you know, city. It has nothing to do with the Strip, but if you want to go to the Strip, it's right there. The fans, the arena, the atmosphere, it's a good team. And you go to Seattle, which is another great city, and do the whole thing again. Why would you come here and try to untangle this terrible ball of yarn on an organization that's missed the playoffs 12 or 13 years? And if you miss again, people are going to be all over you. It's just going to get ugly here. So I
guess on the flip side, you turn it around and
you're
a golden god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I'm a fan base, I want an expansion team. Like, you know, see you later, Oilers. Move to Houston and we'll get the Edmonton somethings. No, I'm kidding.
Well, that's the state of reality. Is expansion team was better, is off in better shape than the Edmonton Oilers are right now, because this team has been mismanaged for so many years. An expansion team with no players, no one in the system, no contracts is a better option than what the Oilers are offering right now, with up against the cap, even the fact that they have the best player in the world, but they don't have much in the system. You're right, a ball of yarn here that some guys got to come in here, not only untangle, but untangle relatively quickly. He can't come in here and build a plan and say, I got a 4-year, 5-year plan for your hockey team. No, you're going to have a 1-year plan for this hockey team, because this hockey team can't be missing the playoffs again. You can't go 13 or 14 years missing the playoffs. And that's the thing. He's going to have a gun to his head. He's going to have a bad situation. He's got bad contracts. And then he's got an owner that wants his buddies to be part of the team as well. So it's a really, really tough sell for anyone to come here and be the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers right now.
Thank you.
Who here is a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association? Put up your hand.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah? I got two of you. Two out of two. Wow. So, you had to vote on six awards, right? Hart Trophy, Norris Trophy, Selke Trophy, Lady Bing Trophy, Masterton Trophy, and I'm missing one. Not the Vezina Trophy.
I haven't even seen a ballot in a while.
You haven't seen a ballot?
No.
Okay, because the Hart Trophy is one of the one of the finalists. One is that what you vote on? You vote on the finalists. So you put forth. Do you put forth a bunch of names?
I don't know who nominates the final three. I'm not sure. They just present a list.
So you guys have to pick from the final three. Right. Is that right? Okay. Because Connor McDavid is one of the finalists this year, and we just found out about them here over the weekend. Nikita Kucherov from Tampa Bay is one. Sidney Crosby from the Penguins another one, and Connor McDavid gets a nominee. Now, Connor McDavid's team did not make the playoffs. What are the chances Connor McDavid is going to win? Probably slim to zero because he's on a non-playoff team. The last person to win that trophy and whose team didn't make the playoffs was Mario Lemieux in 1988. However, Connor McDavid did have a career season playing on a non-playoff team. Kucherov did win the Art Ross Trophy. He had 128 points. McDavid had 116. He was runner-up for the Art Ross as top scorer. I don't know. I mean, who's more valuable to his team, Kucherov or McDavid or Crosby, I guess? Who are you going to vote for?
I hate the way the award is worded. I think it's terrible. It should just be for your best player. That's why I hold the Ted Lindsay Award in much higher esteem than the Hart, because the Hart is such a most valuable to your team. It should be Binnington then in St. Louis. They were last place and they're now a cup favorite. You know, they're a cup contender.
And so the exact wording of the Hart Trophy is the player most valuable to his team. And the Lindsay Award, which used to be the Pearson Award,
right,
which is awarded by the PA.
The players vote on who is the best player in the league.
That one is on who is the best
player. And that's in the one that McDavid's, you know, got, you know, two or three. I mean, Kucherov had a great year. You can't just say he plays on a good team. He put up the most points in that anybody's put up in a long time. You can't ignore that. Then you start to get into this gray area where, okay, I'm going to penalize him because he's on a good team. So then only guys who are on bad teams go in the Hart. It's stupid. I don't like the way it's done, but I'd probably say Kucherov has had a better year, but you're into that hybrid, you know. Is McDavid a better player? I would say so. It's, you know, he's contributed 50% of Edmonton's offense, but again, you know, the other counter argument is how valuable really are you if your team didn't make it? So, you know, I suspect it'll be Kucherov because he had a fantastic year, no question about it, on a team that, you know, didn't win a playoff game either. But, you know, nevertheless, he, you know, it's a regular season award and he had a great year. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, it's funny because you can interpret most valuable player to your team in so many different ways. And first off is, okay, well, first, where did you take your team? Like, where would your team would have been without you, as I look at it? And the Oilers still would have missed the playoffs without Connor McDavid. They would have missed probably by 40 points as opposed to whatever they missed by 10 or 12 or whatever it was this year. So they wouldn't have even been close. It would have been a dreadful team to watch. It would have been awful without McDavid in the lineup. You take Kucherov out of Tampa's lineup, they probably still make the playoffs, and then they're obviously probably still lose out in four games. So they don't go any further with him or without him in the lineup. You take Crosby out of the lineup, there's still there enough for Pittsburgh to make the playoffs? Probably. They still have a pretty decent roster with him. So that's the criteria first that I look at. And I'm a strong believer that you have to get in the playoffs to win this award. I know Jerome McGainlaw once was a big candidate for this award, and Calgary just missed out on the playoffs. But you're still not leading your team anywhere. So I think that's the situation. And Rob's right. If it's the best player in the league award, hands down, Connor McDavid. He's the best player. I think that no one can really debate that. It's ever watched him play and see the numbers that he puts up and just imagine what he would do on a lineup like Tampa Bay's or on a lineup like Pittsburgh's, and how many points would he be putting up? Would he be a 150 point player every year if, you know, he didn't have to get 50% of his team points if they had a bit more scoring around him, if he didn't have to carry the team by himself every night? It's a tough wording of the award. I know there's a lot of debate to it, and maybe the NHL likes that. Maybe the NHL likes the fact that they have debate and there's no clear cut winner every year. I think it is Kucherov this year. I think he had a fantastic season. I think he was very valuable to his team. Was he the most valuable to his team? Again, that's very subjective. But McDavid belongs there because he is the best player in the world. Crosby still is one of the best players in the world. And it's a tough situation. Yeah, you're right. I wish they would say who is the best player in the league. Just leave it at that, and it would be an easy award. But maybe I think the NHL likes that debate. They like the fact that people are talking about it. They like the fact that, hey, if your team doesn't make the playoffs, should you be in the running for this award? I know that a lot of people are upset that he's even in the running because the Oilers didn't make the playoffs. But it leaves for debate, leaves for a lot for interpretation, I think, just the wording and the way the award is presented.
Yeah, the way they word it, it's almost like you have to give it to the best player on a shitty team. Like that's all you can do is, like, if you're on a good team, well, you shouldn't win because you had a lot of help. Well, you know, what's that all about, right? It's really ambiguously worded, and I don't like the way it goes down, because every team's starting goalie is their most valuable player. You lose your starting goalie and, you know, 20 teams out of 30 are done. So, you know, if you want to make that argument, who's most valuable to your team, it's probably your starting goalie. So,
well, I mean, the Hart Trophy is an old trophy. It's almost 100 years old. You know, it was first presented in the 1920s, and back then they had probably their own criteria and wording. I mean, language does change over time. But, you know, they created the Ted Lindsay Award. You know, I think Lester B. Pearson back in the 60s. I can't remember why it was named after him. I have to go do a history lesson and find out. But they really should have just, you know, not created a second award to make it so weird. They should have just changed the criteria for the Hart Trophy, since it was the original one. It looks really cool too, that trophy.
No, it's a great looking trophy, but you're right. Maybe that's why they were probably having this debate 80 years ago when someone that, you know, a six-team league and someone that was the best player didn't make the playoffs. It was one of the teams that didn't make the playoffs.
That was back when they had 11 teams, like with the Montreal Maroons and the New York Americans.
Yeah.
And yeah, could go on and on. Were the Ottawa Silver Seven still a thing? No. I'm sure they were the Senators by then.
Yeah, you shouldn't penalize a player for being on a good team. Like, we saw that with Wayne Gretzky, you know, a few times. And it's just, you know, I think that's why even the voting is, some people are saying, you know, screw it, I'm voting for the best player. And other people are going, you know, by the letter of the wording and saying, you know, most valuable too. And I think people are voting on different, you know, criteria. You know?
Yeah, that's the problem. They're not all on the same page when it comes to who they should be voting for this award.
So I'm getting the sense that you guys are voting for Kucherov as their first place.
Well, I think he should win it. Yeah, personally. Like,
and you're in Edmonton. You're not getting a Christmas card from somebody.
But I do believe that had the Oilers made the playoffs, it'd be a different story. But I'm a strong believer that you have to take your team somewhere. Yeah. You can't just say, well, without him, they would have been 50 points out of the playoffs as opposed to 10. No, yeah. You still got to get in the playoffs.
We had a bad team, but we would have been even worse if it wasn't for Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid. Yeah. So yeah. I think that, to me, that's a criteria. You got to get in the playoffs.
Now, the Oilers sent down Evan Bouchard to the OHL before he hit his 10 games back in the fall, start of the season. He did watch a few games from the press box too. And, you know, it looks like it was the right move. He won the Ontario Hockey League's Defenseman of the Year award recently. His team, the London Knights, got into the playoffs. And they were defeated by the Guelph Storm, led by another Oilers defensive prospect. And now Evan Bouchard is in the AHL. He was called up to Bakersfield, or called over to Bakersfield, where the Condors are in the playoffs. And he played a couple of games and scored a couple of goals and 4 points overall. And, you know, it's not uncommon for teams to bring over junior players, you know, in this situation in the playoffs, particularly when, you know, Evan Bouchard is 19 years old and obviously was a star in the OHL. And he's having an impact on their blue line. So, yeah, I guess obviously when Oilers fans and Oilers observers can go, yeah, we can expect to see a strong showing probably from Bouchard come training camp, and he'll likely be on the opening day roster for the Oilers come October.
I hope not. Yeah, I just,
but maybe not.
I mean, I think if you're putting together this team and you have, if you have spots penciled in for, you know, Bouchard or Yamamoto or Tyler Benson, that's, you're making a big mistake. You're taking a step back. I think you have to have your whole roster set and ready to go with NHL players. And if one of those other kids kicks down the door, then it's a bonus. It's found money, but you can't start the season counting on them to be, because that's what they did this year. And, you know, they all busted and the season was lost, right? You know, let's have Yamamoto up here. Let's have Puljujärvi up here. And then all these people that we just cross our fingers and hope that they turn into players. Like Bouchard has NHL offense right now. Like he can shoot the puck. He can move the puck. He's, if they do it right, he's going to be exactly what they need. He's going to be this top pairing offensive defenseman, puck mover, great shot, power play, the whole thing. But you got to be really careful and just go really, really slow with him. Like if they have him up here, he's your third pairing guy and bring him out for the power plays and that sort of thing. But just, I wouldn't mind giving him 25, 30 games in the American League to start next season. And if he is just so dominant down there that he forces your hand, then great. But if you're sitting there thinking, okay, let's save a spot for him on opening night and cross our fingers that we don't do to him what we did to Justin Schultz, that could be an egregious mistake.
Yeah, the owners are always in kind of a catch-22 situation when it comes to good prospects, is the fact that they don't have anyone better on their NHL lineup, and you almost have to be forced to play these good prospects because these good prospects are better than the guys that you have. And I think that's a vicious cycle to try and end. It's a bad cycle to try to be in when you have a guy like Evan Bouchard and he comes into your lineup and he's probably better than 3 year defensemen that you have on NHL contracts. And I think you have to be patient. You have to be that patient, but they're doing it right. They did it right with Caleb Jones and Ethan Bear. They're doing it right. And they have to do it right with Evan Bouchard. They have to give him a chance to develop into an elite player. And will he do that being in the NHL playing 3 minutes, 5 minutes a night on your third pairing, sitting in the press box every other game? No, he's not going to do it that here. He's got to go down and he's got to develop and he's got to be dominant in the American Hockey League and he's got to gain that confidence. So when he does come up here, he can kind of contribute in the same manner. They looked at him this year and he looked good in spots and he looked good offensively. You're right. But he was a liability on defense. And I think he's still probably going to be a liability on defense. And I think that's something that he has to develop in his game at the American Hockey League level. And you have to be patient with guys like this. And they've done it so far. But when the guys in the American Hockey League are better than the guys you have in the NHL, it's really tough to say, well, why aren't we playing this guy? Why isn't this guy here? And I think they did that with Puljujärvi. And they're hoping that Puljujärvi would work out. And Puljujärvi is kind of a strange case because I think there's a lot of social issues as well with Puljujärvi. It's not just hockey, it's the language.
You can listen to her show.
He's kind of an introverted kid. It's a lot of things that you have to kind of watch out with Puljujärvi. It's not just hockey. It wasn't just a hockey decision that they said, no, we need him up here because he's kind of lost down in Bakersfield. And so Evan Bouchard is not that case. I think he can go down there. He can be a leader. He can be a captain. He can be a really good player on that hockey team. But again, the Oilers don't have that time. They don't have the luxury of that time because they've missed the playoffs 12 or 13 years. They don't have the luxury of being able to, you know, really develop and really let these guys ripen in the American Hockey League like the Oilers want to do, like the Detroit Red Wings were doing for years and years and years because they were drafting so well and they had such a good team. But then suddenly, when they weren't doing as well, suddenly then you saw Dylan Larkin up in the NHL real quick. Then you saw some of those younger guys up in the NHL really quick. It's a nice thing to say that, yeah, we're going to just develop him and leave him down there. But when he's better than the guys that you have up here, and then you have a mandate to win up here right away, it's a tough thing to do. So I'm with Rob. I'd like to see him down there for at least half a year to let him play and let him develop. And if he's too good for that league, then you bring him up to the next league. I think he was too good for the OHL. Unfortunately, there is no buffer when you're 19. It's either NHL or junior. And I really like to see some concession being made. Maybe if you're a first round pick or if you're a top 10 pick or if you, you know, then you have that option to go in the American Hockey League, because I think at that stage you're too good for junior. You're not going to develop at all. You're not going to get any better playing with guys that are worse than you are. you're only going to get better playing with guys that are better than you are. So I'd really like to see the NHL take a hard look at that. I know the junior teams don't want that because they're losing their star players. But I think if you're a top first round pick, you should have the option of going to the American Hockey League. And I think that's something that the NHL should look at. But I don't know how much better he got from last year to this year because he wasn't playing with a lot of players that are a lot better than him.
Yeah, until now. I put zero stock in what guys do in junior almost because you're playing against 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, and one or two guys on every team might be, you know, mediocre NHL players one day. When you get to the NHL, everybody in the NHL is in the NHL. It's a different world. The same from the American League. How many players have we seen, you know, the really good AHL players, and then they come up here and it's nothing? You know, there's JF Schock or Anton Lander, a lot of those guys that were stars down there and just couldn't make that jump. It's a hard league. So go as slow as you can and like wait till he kicks down the door. And if he's the guy that everybody thinks he is, it shouldn't take very long, but let him make that decision. Don't make it for him.
I think about a couple of things. I think about, was there ever a time when the Oilers asked their fan base to be patient with, you know, with players and prospects? We, you know, whether we, maybe it was 20, 25 years ago, I don't know. Not in the 80s. It had to be sometime in the mid 90s when the team wasn't doing that well and they had some prospects down in the AHL or coming up or whatever. And they're like, yeah, we can't just throw Ryan Smith onto the first line right away. He's not ready. You know, eventually he was ready. Or whatever. Was there a time?
Well, there might have been, but I think this team has done such a poor job of drafting and developing that really they haven't.
So could the Oilers go out and say, folks, got to be patient. You know, we've got to let these guys develop. I mean, Bob Nicholson has basically suggested that.
Yeah, he suggested that, but how much patience is the fan base going to have when you're already missing the playoffs? If I was a fan, I'd be like, you know what? I'll be patient. I'll come back when you're good.
Yeah, like I guess it depends on how well their seat sales are going.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is like, if I was a fan, I'd be like, you know what? I've been patient for 12 years, 13 years now, and now you're asking me to be patient because you guys have done such a poor job of drafting and developing. And you look at the situation where they had the four first overall picks. Go back to that Taylor Hall year. Who do they have from that Taylor Hall outside of Taylor Hall? Like no one came through that draft. Go back to the Nugent Hopkins year, the Yakupov year. They did such a poor job drafting in the second and third and fourth and fifth rounds. That's why the cupboards are bare. That's why they don't have decent players to come up. And I think over the last couple of years, they've done a better job making those decisions and making those draft calls. But you know, you draft a player at 17, you're not going to get him in your lineup till he's 20, 21. He's not going to be an impact player till he's 22, 23. That's a long process, especially with defensemen. It takes defensemen a good 5 to 7 years before they become really, really good defensemen. You look at Brett Burns. How long did he kind of was playing up front, playing back, playing? Like, it took him a long while to develop and become this great defenseman.
Well, the Oilers only have two types of draft picks. They're guys that are in the top 10 and guys that don't make it. And that's it. Like, the guys that you're patient with are the ones you take in the second or third or fourth round. And, you know, they've been down in the AHL for 3 or 4 years and then they come. The Oilers don't have any of those guys. So there's been nobody to really wait on other than the guys that they pick, you know, first and third and fourth and seventh and 10th. And okay. And those guys are the ones they kind of, they're better than everybody else. So they're quicker than everybody else. So there is not a whole lot of wait time, or traditionally hasn't been, with that group. But, you know, you look at this team, there's one player on the team drafted outside the first round, right? Jujhar Khera. And everybody else is first, third, fourth, seventh. You know, you and I could have made those picks.
And I think about, you know, this second part of things, never mind the history of the Oilers and asking their fan base to be patient. I think about Canadian franchises who have followed a model of drafting and developing and are now reaping the benefits, or whoever have. You could almost say almost every Canadian team has done a better job than the Oilers have. You know, the Winnipeg Jets come to mind. I mean, how many of their players who are on their team right now? I know they lost in the first round, but obviously last year they went to the conference final, and boy, that, you know, that looks like they're good for years to come, considering who they have in their lineup, who they drafted and developed over the last few years. Because it wasn't that long ago when maybe their GM, Kevin Sheveldayoff, and their head coach, Paul Maurice, were, you know, they're under the gun. They have to make the playoffs. Yeah. You know, it was, what, 2-3 years ago when it was like, you guys don't get the job the next year. You know, you might not have a job, but, you know, the patience paid off.
Although Calgary's got Calgary a great troop. Well. Vancouver's got a ton of young guys. Ottawa drafts really well.
Like, never mind Toronto, for that matter.
Edmonton, I think, is the runaway worst in that whole department. Like, look out for Vancouver in a couple of years. They've got some really good cornerstones coming up, and they're not first overall picks.
Yeah, I think the mistake that the Oilers made, one, they didn't have a very good scouting staff. They had friends and buddies and former players, and the scouting staff wasn't very good. But when they had those top picks, the number one picks overall, they spent too much time focusing on whether they were going to take Taylor Hall or Sagan. They spent too much time focusing on whether they're going to take Nugent Hopkins or Landeskog. They spent too much time focusing whether they're going to take Yakupov or Murray. They didn't spend enough time wondering who they're going to take at 31. And you get guys like Mitch Murrows taken at 31 and some other basic guys that didn't work out at 31 because they spent too much time focusing on the first round and not enough focusing on the second and third and fourth round. And that would have been a great opportunity to say, okay, well, let's not worry too much about we're going to get a good player regardless who we take at number one. We're not guaranteed a good player at 31. And they didn't do their homework and they just said, And they made some bad picks at the second and third rounds that just were busts. And I think that's what really cost the Oilers right now. And you look at the teams that do well through the draft, they don't get the high-end picks. They do well because they have to do their homework, because they have to get guys in the middle of the first round, late first round, late second round, late third round. And those are the guys that pan out for them. And I think that is something that the Oilers really have to clean up. They really have to focus on the later rounds of the draft and not just worry about trying to hit a home run in the first round.
How about those Carolina Hurricanes? What the? They're up 2-0 now on the Islanders after 2 games on the island. Is it because they were playing in Brooklyn? Did the Islanders need to play in Uniondale more often or what? What's going on?
I think it's part of that. I think their loyal fan base is still out in the island and they're still the Islanders on the island. But this playoffs has been so unpredictable anyway, and it's wide open now. Like, everyone's out. It's wide open. Anybody could win the situation. I think they're seeing it now. I think Carolina's They're ravaged by injury, so I don't know how far they can go. They still got a lot of guys hurt. Then they lost their starting goalie now. So how far can they go without their starting goalie? But I think they did get lucky that, you know, the Pittsburghs are out. The Lightning is out. You know, the Leafs are out. Boston's still around. But I think now it's wide open, and they're going far on this. We saw what they did in 2006. I don't think anyone expected them to go as far as they did in 2006. So they're kind of trying to catch that lightning in a bottle as well. It's been a really weird playoff, and I think it's interesting how nothing has gone to script, and so who knows what could happen, and who knows, who says the Islanders can't go to Carolina and win 2 games there, and then you have a series again. So it's, you know, I wouldn't count anyone out at this time, and I just think it's kind of interesting to see how the parity in the league is really showing now that any team can beat any team on a given night.
Yeah. It's not a lot of sexy markets left in the playoffs right now. I'm not sure what the NHL is thinking about this. They know you've got Boston maybe, but you know, a lot of these, you know, underdog stories that outside of their own markets, like, you know, I don't know that Columbus moves the needle that much, you know, for hockey fans in the rest of North America. I mean, it's a great story, a good team and everything, but I don't know what series the cup winner's coming out of. I think it's either Boston, Columbus, probably out of the East, I would think. And then out west, I don't know, I picked St. Louis at the start. I'll stick with them, but they're just, those games are boring to watch, man. I don't like watching the Blues play much at all.
But it's such a contrast, because right now we have the NBA playoffs at the very same time, the exact same round, second round NBA. And of course, the NBA versus the NHL, when you're modeling your franchises, you have the super franchises in the NBA. And those are like Golden State, you know, they're obviously in the final eight here. In the second round of the NBA playoffs, you know, the Toronto Raptors are also playing Boston, Celtics. We got some super teams, but it's such a contrast. Is it, you know, most people, what every, almost was it every single first round series went the way everybody thought it was going to go in the NBA?
I mean, I watch the NBA the way it's designed to be watched, is I ignore it until the final. I don't care who's, you know, all these fodder teams that they trot out to get eliminated. I don't like the league. I don't like the game, but I'll maybe watch the final just to see, you know, hopefully somebody beats Golden State. You know, I like LeBron a little bit. You know, he's a good character player and a probably the greatest player of all time. But the way the NBA is set up, where, you know, there's got 25 farm teams and five real teams, or however many teams are in that league or whatever, it's that's not for me. I don't care. In the NBA, the thing gains momentum the further you go on in the playoffs. In the NHL, it kind of loses it. The first round is incredible. And then it kind of, you know, once your market's out, the summer's here, and you pay less attention to it unless you're hanging around the pool.
Yeah, Peter, I think it's funny because I think there is a lot more parity in the NHL when it comes to the top 15 teams in the league, because you saw it this year, the bottom half of the league, they were all bad. And that's why the Oilers were even anywhere near the playoff race. It's because all the teams at Western Conference were terrible, the bottom half of those teams. And I think you had some elite teams at the top. That's what happens with the salary cap era. And when you're paying one or two players, you can only pay them the astronomical amounts. And then everyone else is third or fourth line guys. And I think that's what's happening here, is that you're getting into a situation where you're paying your top guys $11 million a year. And then you have a real big gap, and then you have to fill out the roster, the rest of them, with $1.2 million players. And I think that's leading to the parity in the NHL, and you're hoping that you get a good $1.2 million player, because that's going to make the difference now, not necessarily your $11 or $12 million players. And I think the Maple Leafs are going to realize that when they have to pay Mitch Marner next year, and they're not going to be able to afford all those guys. So now you're going to have four $11 million players, and you're going to have seven $900,000 players, and you're going to hope you can win that way. And I think that's the difference right now. In the NBA, you can load up with three star players. It's the same thing in the NBA. You get guys that are making $25 million. Then you guys, the 8th or 9th or 10th guy on the bench is making $400,000 or $300,000, whatever the minimum is in the NBA. So there's a big gap. And I think that's what we're seeing in the NHL now, is that the gap between your number 18 player and your number 2 and 3 player is huge. It's growing. It's getting bigger because of the salary cap. And I think that's a situation that kind of makes all the teams kind of on par. You don't have two or three good lines anymore. You have two or three good players, and then you're trying to fill your roster with whatever you have the rest of the way.
Yeah, and I'm not sure parity is great. Everybody loves parity, and they try to chase parity, but history has shown that people don't really like parity. They like the super teams. You know, they like Duke and Kentucky, and they like the watching the Patriots, whether cheer for them or cheer for them to lose. NBA is doing really well with what Golden State has done and a couple of those other teams. If you have a different team from small markets winning all the time, it doesn't move the needle the same way that the super teams do. Like, even if people don't like it, I think those leagues have it figured out that if you have a dominant team, that team that, you know, everybody knows and either loves or hates, then you're gonna follow the fortunes of that team. Whether you want to see the Yankees lose, or you want to see the Patriots lose, or you want to see them win, you know, you'll watch that. Whereas, you know, Columbus St. Louis in the final, I'm not sure.
Do you think the NHL needs to take that into consideration moving into the future?
They might. I don't know. Maybe they like the parody. I don't know. Maybe they like the fact that Rob's right. If Columbus gets to the final, the only people who will care are in Ohio. I don't think anyone's going to watch that final. San Jose moves the needle a little bit, but not that much. But St. Louis gets into the final. It's same thing. No one outside of St. Louis really cares. Those teams don't have a national following.
That's the Oil Spills podcast for today. Subscribe to Oil Spills on iTunes and Google Play. You can also listen to it via the Edmonton Journal and Edmonton Sun apps and websites.